Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 15 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka, and as it appears, we are once again under attack as gun owners in Canada for a shooting in another country. So let's have a little look at the news in this episode. We'll get some interesting insights there. I'll have an abbreviated version of a chat I had with Andrew Lawton on his radio show last week, and a couple of announcements from the CCFR president, Jamie Elliott. All that and more right after this.
Hunters and sports shooters have a lot more in common than they think. Politicians and bureaucrats will never stop pushing toward their vision of Canada where only the police and the military have firearms. All gun owners need to stand together. An attack on one is an attack on us all. Let these people know they do not have your consent. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms. Donate now or become a member of the CCFR at www.firearmrights.ca.
Welcome back, everyone. So much is going on. I want to talk about it, but I'm going to try to make this as quick as possible. So I'm going to bypass a fair amount of detail in actually a lot of what happens on this podcast because of the volume of information I'm trying to get out to you guys. I don't want to be blabbering on for, you know, 2 hours. I don't even want to listen to myself talk that long. So I pity you guys for having to listen to as long as you have to. But anyway, I'm trying to get the information across as quickly as possible. So first thing, once again, the completely obsessed, totally unreasonable anti-gun crowd in Canada is doing everything they can to reignite the gun debate in Canada because of a shooting in another country. And of course, the dregs of Canadian journalism come slithering out to impugn the character of millions of Canadians who still haven't done anything to deserve that kind of treatment, right? And I say that all the time. I still haven't done anything, and you just keep coming back and attacking me as a gun owner. So it's very interesting. Even before I continue, I want to throw this out there. I probably said this 100 times, but it's such a great thing to throw at people when they are attacking you, meaning, you know, a highly vetted, highly monitored, proven responsible member of Canadian society, probably the most highly vetted and highly monitored citizen in the country as a gun owner, right? For some reason, it's very fashionable to not blame large groups of people for the actions of one or two of them. And you're not supposed to stereotype, and you're not supposed to discriminate against anyone in any group in Canada except gun owners. You can totally shake a bloody shirt at any gun owner in Canada or in the United States for that matter. And it's 100% their fault when some nut gets a hold of a gun and kills people. And I, you know, personally, I'm absolutely sick and tired of that kind of behavior from people. It just lacks integrity. It's unethical. And it's just corrupt. It's just absolutely weak people behave in that kind of way. And anyway, I'm certainly tired of it. I'm sure all you guys are. So I want to get all of this negative stuff out of the way so we can just go on to something positive, if at all possible, right? Anyway, when I'm talking about the dregs of Canadian journalism, here we go. As in response to the school shooting in Florida this past last week, from McLean's, another school shooting in America and all the nonsense that will be said. That's an article from Tabitha Southey over at McLean's. McLean's, man, you know, they used to be such a good source of Canadian news, very, very eloquent and elegant, and they've just turned into just a tabloid, basically. Anyway, a quote from it, from Tabitha's outstanding piece of journalism is, "It's not at all that America doesn't love their children." Wow, thanks for clearing that up. "It just amazes me, it just amazes the things that those with an addiction will defend." So all gun owners have some sick addiction. And more from McLean's, Florida school shooting, charting the normalization of gun attacks on U.S. kids. Sandy Hook was supposed to be a turning point leading to real gun control, because, you know, that fixes everything, and a reduction in attacks on school children. Neither came to pass. This is Aaron Hutchins. Also, is as it is commonplace for journalists these days, so-called journalists, Aaron propagates the literal fake news that there have been 18 school shootings in the U.S. since the 1st of January, 7 weeks ago. 18 school shootings. And that was floating. That fake news was floating everywhere. And you know what? All of these big news outlets refuse to research anything. They're just like, okay, what's CNN saying? Which is the pinnacle of fake news, if you guys have been paying attention. You know, 18 school shootings. Well, unfortunately, we have to go to people like me, you know, a nobody up in, you know, the frozen north to debunk stuff that is easily debunkable by major networks. They just don't even care to do it. And apparently it falls on my shoulders or our shoulders to explain ourselves. But anyway, obviously that's quite annoying, right? So the theme is always all gun owners are personally responsible for insane people shooting up schools, and the gun lobby, and in this case, the NRA, might as well have just done it themselves. That's their attitude. And we see this every single time. No solution proposed that's based on evidence and data, just fake news, actual lies, no real data, nothing reasonable, and really, really hyperbolic language. That is just the trademark of these people, just hyperbolic language, always like, what did I see in I think it was McLean's, or it was in the Red Star, the Toronto Star, something about kids are being slaughtered in batches in the U.S. And just like the kind of language is so unproductive, and yeah, it's just horrible behavior. So anyway, rather than me explain it, I want to play a small bit from Stefan Molyneux. I don't know if all you guys out there know who he is, but he's got a philosophy show on YouTube, and he's a very honest, really highly intelligent guy. I agree with him about 97% of the time, but super intelligent and very fact driven. So he will not allow himself to go out on a limb and be hyperbolic anywhere near as often as anyone else. And that's one of the reasons why I like listening to him. So I personally enjoy his stuff. Check this out.
Stop waiting for other people to solve these problems and stop lying about school stats. My God. An outfit called Everytown put out this, and it's been retweeted and reported on. 18 school shootings in 2018. No, don't lie about things like this. 18 school shootings. You know what they included in these school shootings? January 3rd, I think it was the first one, 31-year-old man parked outside a Michigan elementary school and killed himself. The school had been closed for 7 months. No teachers around, no students around, pretty empty. Abandoned building. School shooting. January 20th, 1 a.m., a man was shot at a sorority event on the campus of Wake Forest University. A week later, at a basketball game, Michigan High School, someone fired several rounds from a gun in the parking lot. No one was injured. It was past 8 p.m. No classes. The classes had long ended for the day. School shooting! Group of college students meeting at a meeting of a criminal justice club in Texas when a student accidentally fired a real gun rather than a training weapon. The bullet went through a wall, then a window. No one hurt. Student really upset. Accident problem. School shooting. Stop lying about these things to pursue your goal of disarming the population. Because that is under the lie of gun control. There were a large number, I'm no lawyer, this is just my perspective, you understand, but there were a large number of laws that this kid broke where he was not prosecuted. He was not convicted. So thinking one more layer of legality is going to solve this problem is delusional. There are laws against just about everything heinous that I've talked about here, all the way from shooting at chickens, stealing mail, bringing weaponry to school, and shooting dozens of people. All illegal. Murder, illegal. One more law is not going to solve it. Community involvement is going to solve it. Being proactive, making sure something happens to protect children. Problem is not guns. We're talking about school shootings here. The real danger is in the schools. So I'm going to leave you with something I wrote years ago. And you can get the context in I have a whole presentation, The Truth About Gun Control. Put a link to it below. If you are for gun control, then you are not against guns, because the guns will be needed to disarm people. So it's not that you're anti-gun. You need the police's guns to take away other people's guns. So you're very pro-gun. You just believe that only the government, which is, of course, so reliable, honest, moral, and virtuous, should be allowed to have guns. There is no such thing as gun control. There is only centralizing gun ownership in the hands of a small political elite and their minions.
Whoa. Well, that was pretty heavy. Yeah, if you got to rely on lies to provide yourself an argument as the foundation for your ideas, you know you're not doing very well. You know your ideas pretty much stink, right? So anyway, sorry for the negative, somber sounding sequence. But you know what, guys, this whole topic is horrible, right? Anytime people are shot, innocent people, it's horrible. We just can't just lie down and let people walk all over us, or they'll just take everything we have for no good reason. So anyway, let's try to crank it up a couple of notches and get a positive. We'll go for a break and we'll be right back.
There are politicians and bureaucrats in Canada who believe honest, hardworking Canadians cannot be trusted with firearms. These people will stop at nothing to make sure they are the only ones who can possess them. Let them know you don't consent to their ongoing campaign against you. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, now and for generations to come. Donate or become a member of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights by visiting us at www.firearmrights.ca.
Hey everybody, thanks for joining me again. One thing I wanted to do in this segment, and then I'll move it over to Jamie for some announcements about the CCFR. I wanted to explain how our system kind of works. And this, here's the backstory. I've been talking to professional semi-pro shooters and people that are holding events and whatnot across Canada for the TV show. And I did have a discussion with a guy that is semi-pro, and he said, I'm concerned about appearing on TV doing sports shooting, but using magazines in the way that legally they can be used, meaning I can put different ammunition into a magazine designed for a certain caliber and maybe fit more in there. And, what kind of exposure do I have being on TV using that stuff? Am I going to get into trouble? And herein lies the problem in Canada, and it's super frustrating, right? So anyway, I didn't have time. This was on a Facebook Messenger, right? And I, it's really difficult for me to answer all the people that message me on Facebook, because there's literally dozens of them. People asking me if, how to transport a firearm. I'm like, man, holy crap. Like, you got to go to the firearm center for that kind of stuff, because I can't keep up with my life as it is. So it's not that I don't want to answer people. I know I've said this a million times, but it's not that I don't want to answer people. I can't. If I start doing that, I'll literally be spending 4 or 5 hours a day just answering people's transportation and questions and stuff. So you got to call the firearm center for that, or just jump into the Facebook group or whatever. I'm sure our admins and our Facebook group are going to get mad about me saying that. But anyway, I'm not the right person to come to for that stuff. So anyway, all that to say, this was his question. And I said, well, listen, I can't do 10 paragraphs telling you how stuff works in Canada and what risk you may or may not be exposed to. What I'll do is I'm going to address it in the podcast so other people can hear the same explanation, because they might have the same question. All right. I know, long story, but this is how it works. So the first thing we have to understand, A, this is not legal advice. B, this is my understanding. C, I don't think there's anybody in Canada that understands how this system works in an absolute manner, right? So anyway, just so you know, this is not legal advice. So first thing you got to know about this stuff is how our system works, or at least my understanding. So we have legislation, which is the actual law made by the introduction debate and of a bill and an act of parliament, right? Then we have regulation, which is relatively an easily changed extension of the law that doesn't require any votes or anything like that. And that's so that they can keep legislation, they can improve it, quote unquote, or they can change it easily to keep up with, you know, with the times, sort of thing. I don't know. Anyway, or try to mold the law into, you know, how it was intended to be enforced. So, we can debate on regulation and its role in lawmaking all day long. It's really problematic. Anyway, then you have the police. So for purposes of this discussion, we'll say the RCMP, and they're supposed to enforce the law by recognizing when an infraction has occurred, okay, and make an arrest of the suspected offender. And in some cases, and this is important, it changes for every province in Canada. In some cases, they can press charges, or they recommend charges of an individual, and it's up to the provincial crown to approve the charges and to proceed with the action. So as I said, it's different in every province. Okay, so in British Columbia, the RCMP can't approve charges. They can't press charges against you. All they do is gather evidence, assume that you've committed a criminal offense. They may arrest you for that. And then they go to the crown, the provincial crown. They say, here's what we've got. And we recommend charges, you know, under this section of the criminal code or the Firearms Act or what have you. And then the crown looks at it, who are actual lawyers, right, who specialize in the law, and they determine whether there's a reasonable likelihood of conviction or whether or not the approving of these charges serves the public interest. Okay, and that's how it goes from there. Anyway, that's the deal, at least in British Columbia. Again, here's another disclaimer. This is not legal advice. You can get legal advice for $16 a year if you want to really delve into how the system in Canada works. And those are really easy questions for the legal advice people to answer. So again, non-intentional plug, but hey, might as well while I'm here. You can go on the CCFR, the firearmrights.ca website or CCFR.ca and buy legal advice for $16 a year, and you can call these lawyers all you want and ask them these questions, and you're talking to a lawyer. So anyway, knowing how that works, are you exposed by using legal loopholes for magazine capacities or whatever rules that the CFO might have put on your range when you're doing competition? And here's the thing. Yes, there's always legal exposure in anything you do with a firearm, number one. Number two, yeah, you could be seen on TV and the CFO of a certain province go, hey, you know, I'm going to go crush this person because somehow that's going to reduce shootings and that's going to enforce compliance with the law. Or, you know what, they might look and go, yeah, I don't care, man, they're sports shooters, they're not doing anything wrong, which would be the reasonable thing, right? But as we know, government can't always be relied upon to do the reasonable thing. So having said that, so do you have some exposure? I say that you might, yeah. What are your alternatives? Sometimes you can, and this is a good technique for anybody making decisions in their own life. Sometimes when you can't make the proper decision, just look at your alternatives and make your decision by default. So we can look at this and say, all right, do I go on TV and use magazines that I know are legal to use, but I'm using them in a way that might get me in trouble? Or do I say, no, I decline. I won't assist in spreading my sport and doing all the great things that are meant to be outcomes of doing this TV show. The more PAL holders there are in Canada, the more of a political force we are. But you know, do you take that risk or not? And at the end of the day, could you be arrested? Yeah, you could. Sure. The police can almost arrest you for anything. Would you be convicted of a criminal offense if you're, you know, shoving 13 rounds of 9mm into a handgun magazine for a Glock that's meant for 40 cal? Yeah, but I don't think you'd ever be convicted. But could that cause trouble? Yeah. So at the end of the day, this is the decision. Do we continue on in the shadows and just try to avoid the confrontation as long as we can until it finally comes to us and crushes us? Or do we say, hey, you know what? We're proud of our sport. We're good people. We're trying to be transparent here. And if you come after us, then we'll have to have that confrontation. We'll have to have that legal battle, and we'll have to set those case precedents. I don't know. And you know what? I don't claim to really know the answer to that question. And I can't answer what's good for you. I can only answer what's good for me. And I'm really not that worried about it personally. Because I think that would be a righteous battle. Does everybody want to be a martyr? No. Do I want to be a martyr? No. But at the same time, you can only hide so long. And what kind of life is that? So anyway, I'm just throwing some ideas out there, guys. I don't know the answer myself, but I promised that I would explain that and explain whether there's any exposure. So I guess the answer is yes, there is. But the question is, will that actually affect you in any way? And are those consequences or is that action coming to you regardless? It's only a matter of time. And do you want to get it over with quickly up front, or do you want to wait and maybe have it step into your life later and stress about it from here on in? I don't know. Like I said, only you guys can answer that. So I did just want to mention that real quick. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a quick break, and I'm going to come back with Jamie, who has got some very important announcements here at the CCFR.
Over the past 25 years, tens of thousands of Canadians have had their firearms taken by no fault of their own through arbitrary reclassifications, paperwork errors, or senseless prohibitions. The government's perfect vision of Canada does not include you or your firearms. Let Canada's politicians and bureaucrats know they do not have your consent. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms by joining the CCFR right now at www.firearmrights.ca.
All right, we're back. We've got Jamie Elliott, the president of the CCFR, on the phone. How's it going, Jamie?
Good, thanks. How are you today, Rod?
I'm getting by, thanks. Now, you've got some important announcements for the CCFR, so why don't you just fire away?
Okay, thanks very much. Yeah, so originally we had scheduled and we're looking at having the AGM in Halifax this year. However, the board has come to a decision that unfortunately we can't do that this year. Due to budgetary concerns, we were not able to put a package together that would allow us to host it in Halifax or out in the Maritimes at all this year. So we have changed our mind, and we are actually going to have it in Gatineau, Quebec, at the second weekend of June, which is, I believe, the June 8th, 9th weekend.
Awesome. Is that my cue to say something about it?
Sure.
Well, Jamie, I think that's a fantastic idea. Well, obviously I was somewhat part of the decision, although I'm not on the board anymore, as some people might already know. But I think as the CCFR gets bigger, it'll be a little bit easier for us to go to places like we wouldn't do it in Vancouver either, right? Just like we wouldn't do it in Halifax, because we don't have the level of support there, because we rely on field officers to do a lot of the work for us in these locations. And we're trying to do it in locations that are easy to get to, so people do attend the business meeting and the dinner and all the rest of that stuff. Gatineau made all the sense in the world because it's obviously close, right across the bridge from Ottawa. And so we'll have lots of speakers and access while we're there to politicians. And I'll be there not only for the AGM, but to do a little bit of lobbying too. So it saves us a lot of money to do that. And you know what, when we're a bigger organization, we can go to different cities and create a great big event out of it, maybe like a little gun show. And there's actually a lot of thoughts that I think some of us have had, you know, making an event, or, you know, in different ways, but we got to be careful with our money, you know, right now. So I think it's a good decision.
Yeah, you know, perfect situation, perfect world is that we would create an event around our AGM that would actually pay for the AGM. So gun show speakers, seminars, et cetera, et cetera. That's big picture. We're just not quite there yet. So we really do have to watch watch the cost of the AGMs, and unfortunately, we just couldn't get within the budget that we had allotted for Halifax. So, you know, we'll keep it central this year in Gatineau. It allows, well, pretty much half of Canada's population is within a six-hour drive of Gatineau, so it leaves it very accessible to lots of people.
Yeah, I think Gatineau is going to come in even less expensive than Calgary did, which I was really surprised about personally.
Yeah. When we were doing the budget and that, it's going to probably actually turn out to be the cheapest AGM yet. Nathan and Gord have been working really, really hard on, trimming the fat, as we'll call it, and get it to a point where these things are the best bang for member dollars and not having any extra waste. And so that we can really devote more of our funds back into the advocacy that we want it to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got a lot of projects going this year.
Yes. So, and then the other exciting announcement that I have is that you, Rod Giltaka, will be attending the Toronto Sportsman Show.
Isn't really?
Exciting for everybody.
Oh, well, that's a surprise.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
So you get to come out and hang out with us for Friday, March 16th.
That's true. That's true. I will be there. And it's going to be great to meet a lot of people that I haven't had the opportunity to meet. And so I will be at the booth. I don't know what my schedule is exactly, but I will be at the booth for, I'm sure, a few hours, and we'll send that information out. I'm sure I can squeak in a pub night or something as well.
And yeah, we do have the Friday night pub night there as well at, I believe it's Arizona Bar and Grill, just down the street from the International Center. Uh-huh. And Tracy has posted that in the Facebook group.
Well, I guess that's what I'm doing.
we own you now.
Well, it's funny, like sometimes people will say, they'll ask me about certain stuff that the CCFR is doing. And I say, yeah, I have no idea. I'm not involved in any of that. And I think maybe sometimes people don't believe that, but like it's genuine. Like there's so much stuff going on all the time. There's no possible way I can be a part of even planning all that stuff. So yeah, on Friday night, I'll be at the Arizona, did you say?
Yeah, Arizona Bar and Grill. It's fantastic. Just down the street from the International Center. So we'll have a pub night there, and everybody will be able to meet and greet and have a chat with you that maybe if they weren't able to get past the booth during the day.
That sounds great. And we will also be doing a little bit of filming for a TV show at the TSS as well. So that's getting some B-roll and maybe some interviews and whatnot. But yeah, that'll be happening as well.
It's going to be an exciting time. I mean, we tried to get you out there last year, out to the Toronto Sportsman Show, because it is one of our largest shows. And, obviously things didn't work out for that. But this year, with everything else going on and making this a giant whirlwind trip for you, I'm aware of your itinerary. You're going to be busy there for about 10 days in the Toronto-Ottawa area. So it's great that we were able to arrange it so that you could come past there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 11 days. It's going to be a long trip.
Yeah. Well, it'll be good because you get to see all kinds of people that you normally wouldn't be able to have a chance to.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. Awesome. So anything else?
If you want to mention the TACCOM at Firearms Outlet Canada, you will be there the following weekend. I believe that's March 24th. You're going to be going to that one as well, and doing again some filming with or for the TV show and interviews, etc. And yeah, just supporting Firearms Outlet Canada for the launch of their whole new, I guess it's an indoor shooting range that they're getting up and running here shortly.
Mm-hmm. And that I did know about because I'm going to be doing a seminar there as well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Good
so
deals.
Yeah, so people can probably check out, I'm not sure the details on that one exactly, but I'm sure they can check out Firearms Outlet Canada and find out exactly what's happening there and when everything is happening.
And I think the website, and I'm going to give them a shout out because they're a good group of guys and I appreciate the support. The website for that show is called TACCOMCanada.ca. And I'm just doing that by memory because this is a spur of the moment thing. So it's a sports shooting and tactical trade show. So definitely go check it out. Check out the website and see what they have going on there. I'll be there too.
Excellent. Well, I'm planning on trying to come down for one of the days down there to visit as well. So You'll have all kinds of CCFR directors and myself and Rod and I believe Gord from Ottawa is coming down as well. So there's going to be a whole pile of CCFR royalty there.
Royalty. So glamorous. But yeah. But anyway, yeah. I think we have a booth there, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be a great success, and helping and support Firearms Outlet Canada for what they want to accomplish in that area is going to be, I think that's a big thing as well, because they've been pushing pretty hard over the last little while, and having a new indoor range right in the heart of suburbia is quite an accomplishment. So, I mean, that's going to be really big for them, and hopefully that'll help to drive more interest in the shooting sports in that area.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I'm actually going to be interviewing Fred, the president of FOC. I'm going to be talking to him about the challenges as he's had trying to open an indoor shooting range. So that will be on the show somewhere in there at some point.
Excellent. Yeah, I can't even imagine the headache that would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not easy. All right. Well, if that's it, I will let you get on with it, and we'll take it from there.
Excellent. Thanks for having me on, Rod.
Awesome. Thanks, Jamie. Take care.
It's a fact that licensed gun owners do not represent a disproportionate risk to public safety. Yet whether it's backdoor gun registries, complex regulations, or unreasonable penalties for paperwork offenses, Canada's anti-gun bureaucrats will never stop trying to eliminate your will or ability to own and use firearms. Take action, take a stand, and join the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights by visiting us at www.firearmrights.ca.
Nicholas Cruz, 19 years old, charged with 17 counts of premeditated murder. At 19, he, about a year ago, purchased a gun that you never stop hearing about, especially with mass shootings, it seems, the AR-15. It's a semi-automatic rifle, not an assault rifle, as is often reported. In fact, I've seen a few media outlets use that term this morning. And the semantics are important. I think they are relevant, frankly, when it comes to the lives of people lost in mass shootings and in violence of any kind. But unfortunately, there are all too many people that want to take these incidents and focus exclusively on guns and gun policy rather than a lot of the other prevailing factors here. And I wanted to talk about this a little bit. Joining me on the line is Rod Giltaka, who's president of the Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights. Rod, thanks for coming on the show today. It's good to speak to you.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
Let's talk about this, because these stories now are not at all uncommon, it seems. And even though we in Canada are somewhat insulated from it in that we don't have the mass shootings, as far as the media goes, we often hear the cases as well. We mourn with Americans when this stuff happens here. Do you think it is reasonable, whenever one of these happens, to bring the discussion around to firearm access if someone did legally obtain the gun they use for something like this?
Well, we have peer-reviewed studies that show that the gun control doesn't have a demonstrable effect on public safety. And if you look at the two different situations that we have in Canada and the U.S. as they apply to school shootings, in Canada, we have a school shooting once every decade. And in the United States, they're far more common. And then you try to tie that to access. But it's kind of interesting. In Canada, we have, well, we think, because we're not sure, but we think there's around 20 million guns for 36 million people. In the United States, they have around 300 million guns for plus or minus, let's say, 330 million people. So very similar numbers of guns per capita. Yet the difference, there's a huge difference in shootings and school shootings. So, you know, I have a really hard time connecting gun control or access to firearms with, you know, issues that might be cultural issues or societal breakdown or stuff like that. It just, these types of rationales, they don't stand up to scrutiny.
Despite those similar numbers per capita, I don't think anyone can deny that the ability of an individual to access a firearm is dramatically different in Canada from the U.S. In Canada, you've got to go through the process of doing your firearm safety. You've got to get the PAL or the RPAL in that case. And in the U.S., someone with, in some cases, criminal records, we find are getting firearms. So there is a difference, is there not, despite those numbers?
there definitely is a difference in our gun control regime. But I think if you, you know, if we're talking specifically about school shootings or any other multiple victim public shooting, you got to look at the individual. So apparently gangsters don't have a problem sourcing firearms and using them in Canada. And multiple victim public shooters, when they do these things, it doesn't really matter where they got the guns. They seem to source them anyway. So you're actually talking, the real focus should be you're looking at the individual that decides that they're going to use firearms to murder other people. And how do you stop that, right? Because I have many firearms, and I haven't shot anyone, and I don't intend to shoot anybody. So there's a difference there, but yet my access to firearms is unlimited, I guess, based on our system. So it's a lot more complex a question than gun control, and unfortunately that's pretty inconvenient for some folks, right?
There are a lot of people that will listen to you saying that, Rod, and feel like it's tantamount to just throwing in the towel and saying, well, you know, this is just going to happen, I guess.
Well, the facts don't bear that out, right? The facts just don't support that. And you know, when someone is running out of, you know, justifiable structure for their argument, when they just go to an emotional appeal and jettison facts. And we're never going to solve problems until we actually sit down and have a serious discussion that isn't tainted by whatever the evil gun of the day is. I mean, people own guns and they don't do anything wrong with them. And it's a very small number of people that commit these tragedies. And it's horrible, but those are the facts.
If we can't link this, in your view, to gun control or a lack of gun control, what is it that you think is dramatically different between Canada and the U.S. that's causing there to be, or the U.S. and any other country in the world that has high gun ownership? Switzerland is a notable example of this. What is it that puts the U.S. in a really unique situation as far as the volume of these mass shootings are concerned?
Well, I've said it many times that the real factors, like gun violence itself is really just violence, right? It's using an efficient tool, which is a gun, but trucks can be just equally as efficient, but it's really violent behavior. And the United States is a bit of an outlier. For what reasons, we don't know, but we can certainly speculate. I think that violent behavior is a result of poverty, unemployment, lack of opportunity, political personal isolation, political polarization. I mean, I've never lived, I've been alive for a while, right? But I've never lived in such a hypocritical society in my life. Things are really stressful out there. And it's hard for young people to establish themselves in society. There's a lot of stress on people, and people handle it in different ways.
Yes, and I find it to be very odd, and you mentioned earlier the emotional argument, how much the media loves to focus in and fine-tune their coverage to very specific, and I would say insignificant, things. AR-15 is one example here, probably one of the most misunderstood firearms. First off, it isn't just one singular model of gun. Secondly, it's not a fully automatic. It's not a quote-unquote assault rifle. But what's interesting is that there's one story here that was pushed out by the Associated Press. I'll read the headline, and you kind of get a sense of what the story here is. And it is as follows. My screen refreshed here. Basically, the one thing that exists that is kind of a constant in the U.S., all mass shootings have something in common, the AR-15. That's like saying that, you know, all obese people have one thing in common, McDonald's. I mean, to say that that's the gun of choice, well, it's a popular gun. I mean, that's like saying car accidents skew heavily towards whatever the most popular type of automobile is.
Well, you did. You have the answer to that question. But if I were to put it a different way, the real elephant in the room is that the AR-15 is not any different than any other semi-automatic rifle. But we don't have problems with other semi-automatic rifles. So what's the answer? It's a common rifle. It's extremely common in the United States, and I think there's around 100,000 of them in Canada. So it's just another. It's just another rifle, and to call it an assault rifle is—that's getting old. To be honest, it is frustrating because it's been debunked how many times. I mean, I can call my shoe a cell phone as many times as I want. I still can't place any calls on it. And the AR-15 is not an assault rifle, and the assault rifle, the term assault rifle is sort of made up, as you're well aware, but maybe your listeners might not be. But it's commonly used to describe a military firearm that is fully automatic, right? That continues to cycle for as long as I hold the trigger. And in Canada, we can't have those. Even the criminals in Canada don't use full autos, even though they can source those. And even the criminals in the United States don't use full autos, and they can source those too. So there's so much misinformation, it's almost near impossible to really explore the real problems or the real reasons behind all these problems.
One of the remedies or I guess mitigating factors that the NRA has often been a proponent of is armed guards in schools. In this particular case, I read one report that there was in fact an armed deputy on school campus, but the gunman didn't encounter him in the time that he was on his killing spree. Do you think that armed guards are kind of an inevitable reality? And do you think the response to this is to say, all right, I guess they don't do the job? Or do you think more of them? Or do you think it's kind of irrelevant one way or the other?
Super interesting question. So there's some interesting data here just from our own experience. So back on December 6, 1989, there was a shooting at a Col de Polytechnic, right?
Yep.
And Mark Lapine ran around for 20 minutes, shot everybody he could. And then he actually had 60 rounds left in loaded magazines, but he decided that the game was up for him and he killed himself. I think the police didn't even enter the building till 40 minutes. I could be wrong on that, but I mean, he had free reign of the place. But then in the Dawson College shooting, what was different? How did that shooting end? Right? In the first instance, Mark Lapine just exhausted himself. And in the second instance, Kim Vergil was actually shot by a visiting Montreal City policeman. The only thing that stopped him from killing as many people was the fact that there was another gun there. And this is the most glaring piece of evidence. The answer to the problem right there is like, well, there has to be another gun there to stop things because, you know, society didn't stop Kim Vergil. The gun control regime didn't stop him. Nothing stopped him other than another gun. And we've seen that. And oddly enough, in universities, when that happened at Dawson College, what was the reaction at Dawson College? It was to declare the college a gun-free zone, A. I mean, how ridiculous. And it's almost an insult to victims, to be honest with you. And what was the other rule? You know, you can't take guns on public transit to go to the range or whatever. Like, just, I don't know. It's really, I there's no will to really solve these problems or address them. That's what it feels like to me a lot of the time.
Joining me on the line is Rod Giltaka, president of the Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights. Rod, thanks for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right, all the best, sir.
All right, everyone, that will wrap it up for this episode 15 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Thanks for joining me. Now, as I normally like to do at the end of the podcast, I like to tell people how they can help themselves as gun owners, right? So one way you can do that is help us help you become a member of the CCFR or donate a couple of bucks as much or what you think is appropriate as you can. We appreciate that. We stretch those member dollars as far as we possibly can with projects and initiatives and all the rest of that stuff. And you guys can always go to firearmrights.ca to see the big list of everything we've done in a very short period of time, which that list has not been updated. There's a lot more stuff in there than has actually happened, or a lot less stuff than has actually happened. So we'll get that updated pretty soon. You can see what the results are there. Also, talk to people online. That's something that you can do. This whole thing is a grassroots effort. So talk to people online, be reasonable, be kind to them, stick to the facts. You know, don't retaliate with ad hominem attacks, stuff like that. And what happens is most often, and this is interesting, most often you'll feel like you won't win the argument with the person that you're actually arguing with. But by your behavior and your adherence to facts and treating people fairly and just asking people to be fair in the way they approach things, even though you don't win that one person over that maybe is, or the two or three people that might be dogpiling on you, a lot of other people see those comments. And they might walk away going, oh, the gun guy there was the reasonable one and everybody else was an idiot. And they might, you have no idea. You could be winning over 15 other people and yet you're walking away frustrated and feel like you've been defeated because people weren't listening to you. You know, grassroots efforts like this is how they work. It takes a long time and it takes a lot of patience. And you got to train yourself to be patient and not get frustrated with people. And, you know, believe me, I get frustrated with people, right? I'm nowhere near perfect. I'm not telling you that I can do that in all cases myself, but I try. Okay, so that's something definitely you can do. Share the explainers, share gundebate.ca. That's what it's there for. And one more thing I want to leave you with that is important.
contact the news in your local area. If you can go to a website where your local reporters have email addresses or contact forms, contact them and tell them that, hey, listen, if you want to do stories on gun laws, regulations, mass shootings, you know, a crime with firearms, maybe stories on law-abiding gun owners, God forbid, right? Tell them to contact the CCFR. Tell them to talk to us. We're media savvy. We're easy to get along with. We're not extremists. You know, we're very well versed in this kind of stuff. So try to get them to contact us and get us out there in front of people. We're there to represent you as a public relations organization, to represent you in the most positive possible way. Don't forget, right? Because that's why the CCFR exists. So if you can do a little bit of work here and there and notify the news and different reporters and news organizations in your local area or not in your local area that we exist and we're here to help, then please do that. That's great help. So anyway, thanks again for listening. Take care, and we will see you next time.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.